Another week goes by, another commitment for the Oklahoma Sooners, this time from the transfer portal along the offensive line. We'll talk about Mr. Troy Everett on today's episode of Locked On Sooners.
You are Locked On Sooners, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma Sooners, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is up, Sooner Nation? Welcome to Locked On Sooners. Today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for making Locked On Sooners your first listen every single day. We're free and available on all podcast platforms and on YouTube. Hit that subscribe button and that notification bell to let you know when new episodes drop. Also, be here Monday night, 9 p.m. Central Time for the weekly live show. I'm John Williams. Follow me on Twitter at John9Williams. He's Josh Helmer. Follow him on Twitter at JoshDonRef. Also, check him out Monday through Friday from 9 to noon on 94.7 The Ref in Norman. Josh, let's talk Troy Everett, offensive lineman, Appalachian State, committing to the Oklahoma Sooners. Now, this one was a little bit out of the blue. Not a name that I'd really had on my radar as I was following transfer portal stuff for the Sooners. What do you make of Troy Everett? How does he fit in for Oklahoma?
Well, what I make of it is clearly Oklahoma felt what I think a lot of us saw as maybe a problem from the spring game was interior offensive line. Can we improve there? And or just we need more bodies there, and we need somebody that's somewhat of an experienced body. Now, Troy Everett's not somebody that's played just all sorts of football, John, but here's somebody that, yeah, did start six games at center to begin last season for Appalachian State. And again, to me, I think it has to signal that Oklahoma feels like, okay, we could use a little bit of extra help on the interior offensive line. And probably if not corner, then interior offensive line, John, would be, to me, what I would have wanted to see Oklahoma go find out of the transfer portal.
It's a strong addition. This is a guy that started the first six games of the season for Appalachian State against teams like North Carolina, Texas A&M, Troy, three really solid teams. And the Appalachian State Mountaineers, is that right? I might be getting that one wrong. App State, yeah. Thank you. Sorry, that one just didn't seem right as I said it. I don't like dual and multiple mascots, so it really bothers me when there's like two of the same. So like West Virginia and App State sharing a mascot, and it really bugs me that the Big 12 now has multiple Cougars in it with Houston and BYU coming in 2023. The whole SEC thing with three Tigers. Sorry, this is a tangent, but like so many Tigers in the SEC, it just stop it. Get a new mascot. Don't be the same, fight for the mascot, whatever. Anyway, App State had really good games, really good performances against UNC, Texas A&M, and Troy on the ground in particular. They ran for over 200 yards on the ground against UNC and then a little bit over a buck 80 against Texas A&M. So a really solid dude. And, you know, this is a guy that has the, some experience, getting those first six starts under his belt, before kind of becoming more of a rotational part-time player in the latter half of the season. I think it's a good addition. We saw what the Oklahoma Sooners' depth looked like in the spring game, and it really wasn't a whole lot to write home about. As much as we want to see, these guys on the interior take another step, a Nate Anderson, our boy Joshua Bates, it just didn't seem like the center position in particular was just right there and ready to be ready to go if something were to happen to Andrew Raymond. We've seen injury situations pop up with Raymond in recent seasons. So finding a guy that, you think you can develop and plug in and play on the interior, that's important. Now, he's probably going to get a little bit of opportunity to work both at center and guard, because we know that Bill Beedenbow values offensive line flexibility. He likes guys that can play multiple positions. So it would not surprise me to see this guy kind of get some looks at guard in addition to center and, maybe compete for, left guard snaps. That's a situation that's not quite settled yet. So this is a dude that can come in, kind of push a guy like Caleb Schaefer, push, you know, Aaron Parks or, you know, Savion Bird or Caden Green even, and just see where he lands and then potentially be your backup center, possibly end up being your center for 2024 as you make your transition to the SEC. He's got some Power Five experience to be able to build off of, and that's huge.
No doubt. And it's probably worth mentioning, just since we're on subject here, that was an Appalachian State win over Texas A&M, by the way. For anybody that might be feeling a little blue, that should obviously add a little happiness to you out there. And oh, by the way, Appalachian State ran the ball 17 out of 21 fourth quarter plays. So they leaned on the run game in that contest to beat A&M. So to me, it's pretty simple, John. Again, position or positions of need for Oklahoma right now, center, guard, so interior offensive line, and you go get somebody that they feel like projects to have some upside here. I'm not here to sit and make the argument that Troy Everett's coming to Oklahoma and he's starting from day one because he started the first six games at App State. I don't know that he's just automatically supplanting anyone. This could be just, hey, let's fortify depth. But to me, 6'3", 285, probably at Oklahoma, John, they're going to continue to add weight to that 6'3", 285. I would imagine the Roanoke Virginia native is going to get bigger than that before he gets lighter than that at Oklahoma. So there's room for him to add weight at a position where Oklahoma needed it. And oh, by the way, you know, of all the things we mentioned, did we mention that he was a freshman, second team All-American, courtesy of the Athletics? So some of the national writers out there, some of the national reporters out there, John, they see the potential for a Troy Everett. And oh, by the way, one other thing here. Obviously, you know, coming out of high school, you look at the offer sheet, and here it is. It's, of course, App State where he signed, Army, Charleston Southern, Chattanooga, Coastal Carolina, Columbia, Dartmouth, Delaware, Go Hens, Eastern Kentucky. So on and on and on, right? The lower tier schools here. But oh, by the way, you get a little bit deeper into the weeds and you see, well, Clemson was in the mix. They didn't offer, but they were in the mix, kind of combing around. Duke, same story. Louisville, same story. South Carolina, same story. So this is somebody that, yeah, was a three-star, but was right there on the fringe of the Power Five radar, John. Didn't quite get that offer. And sometimes it's a tidal wave. You get that first Power Five offer, and then the dominoes start falling. And it didn't seem like, I guess, that happened for Troy Everett. But obviously, he's garnered that interest here now.
Yeah, sometimes it just takes a little bit of a game experience at the college level to really make people take notice. It can be hard to judge a player based on level of competition a lot of times at the high school level, depending on where the kid comes from. If, you know, there's the tape isn't there, it can be hard to really, you know, make a name for yourself if the level of competition is not strong enough sometimes. But definitely, you know, made some waves and now is going to be an Oklahoma Sooner. So big time addition again for Bill Beatonbow, who continues to just add talent, add bodies to see who's going to rise to the top and become significant players along the offensive line. Speaking of a guy who's going to be a significant player, probably for the Sooners, the Oklahoma Sooners received another Rivals Future Cast for 2024 five-star defensive lineman Williams Nwaneri. We'll talk to you about him after the break. First, let's talk to you all about FanDuel.
Make a fast break to FanDuel during the NBA playoffs because right now, new customers, a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. What does that mean? That means $1,000 back, up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet does not win. There's no better place to bet on all the playoff action than at America's number one sportsbook. That is FanDuel.com/LockedOn. And is it time? I didn't think I'd get to this point, but I'm sneaking around the corner here. Is it time to start taking the Los Angeles Lakers' future seriously? I didn't think I'd get to that point, but they are 5-1 right now to outright win the whole stinking thing. The Phoenix Suns, you got pretty good odds right there, plus 650. I would imagine that number is going to go the other direction, closer to minus money now that they've evened things with Denver. So that'd be maybe a good one to consider is if you can get Phoenix right now, plus 650 to win the whole thing. That not a bad way to go. But you can find out all of that and more over at FanDuel. FanDuel, FanDuel.com/LockedOn. Get a no sweat first bet up to $1,000. FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. So the good times keep on rolling, as it were, John. How about this? I did not know that there was an EMA online, Every Man a Wildcat, but apparently there is an EMA online. I don't know if that's the Rivals rebranded or I just was unaware of that, but Mason Voth, who is the K-State Rivals recruiting analyst, has submitted a Rivals future cast for Williams-Winery to Oklahoma. And I would say, John, out of the, Parker and Brandon, anytime they speak on something recruiting-wise from OU Insider with Rivals, if they put a future cast in, yeah, you're listening, you're taking it seriously. McQuestion, obviously, an on-3 prediction. I trust, long story short, Colin Kennedy now with Sooners Illustrated. I trust all of the OU recruiting experts, right? But I will say this, when you're talking about somebody that's at least Summit North, John, a Kansas City type kid, and all of a sudden somebody from the K-State or KU beat comes in, or the Missouri beat comes in, and they say, yeah, crystal balled to Oklahoma. That to me, or future cast in this case, not to mix wires here on the recruiting sides. As soon as that comes into play, John, to me, that is a very, very good sign that somebody that is pretty connected to those coaching staffs is coming in saying that.
It definitely stands out, and I know a lot of people want to give guys like Parker and Brandon and Josh McQuestion and, Colin Kennedy, they want to give them a hard time a little bit for the misses that they have. But if you look at the track record, they're right far more often, like 85, 90% of the time. So let's just go with that. But yes, you're absolutely right. Then when you get one from somebody that's outside of the Sooner sphere, that does ring out. It's like when, Tennessee Rivals, insider, Shane Pickering, he issued a Rivals future cast favoring the Oklahoma Sooners for Williams-Winery. That stuff rings out. Like, it makes people take notice, especially when Williams-Winery is considering a place like Tennessee, and you have, a Rivals Tennessee writer, analyst, recruiting analyst saying, it looks like Oklahoma to me. Then that makes a significant statement on the recruiting trail, in the recruitment. Now, is that anything that's like, okay, this is definitely, it's written in stone? I mean, these are all basically predictions. It's like, to me, this seems a lot like the NFL kind of mock draft kind of cycle, mock draft season. Now, these guys are far more accurate a lot of times than mock drafters, but when you start hearing the buzz with, Bryce Young at number 1 overall, CJ Stroud at number 2 overall, things like that, you kind of take notice of those things. When you start stacking and piling up recruiting predictions for a guy like Williams-Winery, it just seems like it's a matter of time. I mean, let's just break it down. I mean, he's got, future cast from Parker and Brandon, who kind of carried theirs over from Crystal Balls when they were with 247 Sports still. Again, Shane Pickering, and then Mason Voth also, submitting the Rivals future cast, and then Josh McQuestion, who had a Rivals future cast in, and then when Sooner Scoop moved over to On3, again, resubmitted that, carried that prediction over to On3. So, like, it's a statement. Now, the question is, when is he going to commit? Nobody knows really at this moment when he's going to commit. This is going to be a recruitment that plays out for some time. Could be before his senior year. It could be one of those things where we don't know anything until signing day. I think it's still up in the air. But Oklahoma's well positioned at this point in the recruitment, and that's what these say, is Oklahoma's done a really, really good job with Todd Bates and Miguel Chavis to put themselves in a strong position to land a 5-star player, arguably the number 1 player in the recruiting class, easily the number 1 defensive lineman in the recruiting class. And that's what that says, at the very least, is they've done a good job putting themselves out in front. Now it's just a matter of keep recruiting, finish the recruitment strong, get the commitment, get the signing. Because he's a player worth, following through all the way to the end.
Well, and here's somebody that John could line up anywhere they want along the defensive line. I mean, he could play on the interior if you wanted him to. Just add a little bit of weight, and away he'll go. And he does a lot of that already, at least Summit North. And I mean, at this level, he just makes these guys look silly. I'm watching the tape as we're taping the show right now. I mean, it's unfair. It's unfair what he does with his first step, whether on the interior, on the perimeter of the defense, and just that first couple of steps, that burst, man, he's so athletic. He's so powerful. He's only going to get bigger, stronger, faster, better as time goes on, especially if you come to Oklahoma and you start working with the Miguel Chavises and the Todd Bates and the Brent Venables of the world. This kid, uber, uber talented. And if nothing else, John, it, I think, reinforces what we felt and have felt at different stages. Oklahoma's the leader for Williams-Winery. Now, there's plenty of suitors, and this thing, like many recruitments, can change rapidly, right? But right now, if the decision was today, and it's not today, I think it would be Oklahoma. And this, it just feels like, and I don't want to, you know, there will be some gotcha folks out here if this does not come to fruition. I think this is going to be a historic defensive line class for Oklahoma, John. I just think that it's starting to trend that direction. I know that David Stone hasn't made the announcement, but I think he's going to wind up a Sooner. I think Winery's going to wind up a Sooner. I think Nigel Smith's got a great chance to wind up a Sooner. And I think a couple of these other defensive linemen are going to wind up as Oklahoma signees as well. And all of a sudden, we're going to look back and say, oh, man, what was that? What was that Hicks panic again? What was all that about?
Yeah, they're trying to put together something like Texas A&M did in 2021, 2022 with what they're building right now on the recruiting trail. Again, it's, you know, commitments aren't signings and predictions aren't commitments, but it's a good sign of where we're at in this recruitment. So we'll continue to monitor. We'll follow it as we go along. It's like we've talked about with David Stone, you know, Williams-Winery, he's a big fish. You know, you gotta land him, gotta figure out a way to get, I mean, one or both of these guys would be absolutely huge, but I mean, you got to get at least one. And if you can get both, I mean, that is big, big time. But again, you mentioned Nigel Smith, and then there's Joseph Jonah Ajonye. And I mean, that's another great one. Sorry, I always want to make sure I get it right, because when I was recording with John, you know, a couple weeks back, I totally butchered it, and I apologize for that. But Joseph Jonah Ajonye, a four-star, high four-star player as well, like, they have a chance to bring in 5-6 guys along the defensive line to add what they've already done in the 2023 and 2022 cycles. I mean, you're stacking talent, you know. You have R. Mason Thomas and Grayson Halton from the 2022 class that are already kind of showing out a little bit in their first year plus with the Sooners. And then in the 2023 class, you got Adepoja Adebare, you got Derek LeBlanc that are making noise in their first spring with the Sooners. So you keep stacking defensive line classes, and eventually that's going to pay off in such a way that, okay, we've got the Brent Venables defensive front that we've been longing for. We're hearkening back to the Gerald McCoy and Tommy Harris and Dan Cody, you know, pick another, you know, Booger McFarland, not Booger. Who am I thinking of? I'm blanking on a guy, but just
Jamarcus McFarland was.
Thank you. Jamarcus McFarland. Thank you. A lot of really, really talented defensive line, you know, players, and you're stacking them up. You know, that's why they were able to be so good defensively from like 2000 to 2007, 8, 9, 10. And then not long after Brent Venables left, the wheels kind of started to fall off. It takes time to kind of restock the pool at defensive line, but they're off to a really good start early on in Venables' tenure with the Sooners. Turning the page, the Oklahoma Sooners softball team finished the season strong with a 3-game sweep of Oklahoma State in Stillwater for what could be the last Bedlam series for some time. I'm of the mind that they'll figure something out for 2025, but as things stand right now, we don't have a series scheduled beyond 2024 because that's in Big 12 play. But man, what a weekend. Oklahoma just did everything they needed to do. Won games big on Friday. They won 8-3. Had the dramatic comeback on Saturday evening with the 4-2 win, winning with four runs in the top of the seventh inning. And then on Sunday, just a really solid, you know, performance, a great, you know, start by Alex Tarocco, some clutch hitting, getting a couple different 2-run hits in that game. So Josh, just takeaways from the weekend, and then we can just even talk takeaways from the regular season here in a minute too.
This team, this program is incredible. They never it shouldn't amaze you. And yet, you know, down two to nothing on the road in Stillwater, seventh inning, your mind does go there because you saw Baylor beat Oklahoma earlier this season, where you kind of kept waiting for the bats to come along. And then on that one day, it just didn't happen. And yet, if you went there, you shouldn't have gone there because it's Oklahoma. I don't know why we would let our minds go there, but it's just amazing the level of brilliance and excellence that this program continues to exhibit in those kinds of moments. It's not easy rallying back from two down on the road against that opponent in that environment. And yet Oklahoma, as soon as they played it the first, you thought to yourself, they're going to do this. And sure enough, T.R.A. Jennings, ultra clutch in the moment. Just amazing. I had a fun time on my Twitter feed tossing out there, hey, what was how did you, via superstition, win this game for Oklahoma softball? Because for me, I had left the house. I was frustrated, flipped on Plank, and sure enough, boom, like clockwork. As soon as I got in that car for the seventh inning, the rally started. Sure enough, boom, Sooners win. And the responses that I got over on the social media feed was pretty fun. So it was cool to see how Oklahoma fans took in what was, it put into perspective for me, Oklahoma fans don't take it for granted either. Even as commonplace as this program has made it, John, it's like you're not wowed because it's Oklahoma softball, and yet you're wowed at the same time because it's Oklahoma softball. So I had a nice appreciation for the way that the Oklahoma fans appreciated it on Saturday. They don't take it for granted. It is very, very special, and yet it's commonplace for this program, which is just crazy.
You know, it is a unique thing, right? To be as good as they've been for the last decade plus, especially over the last, two and a half, last three seasons, we'll say that, yeah, we're still in awe. We're still, taken aback by what this team's able to do, and still just kind of surprised, but not surprised at the same time in their ability to just wow us, and that's really cool, because it is easy to just kind of get on your high horse and have this expectation that, every game is a dub. And then also, like, if it's not going your way, just kind of start pouting and, complaining and things like that. But you don't even see that. You mostly just see, like, they're going to come through. Like, there's this belief that they're going to come through. And I know that there are people out there that doubted it. I know I did earlier in the season at one point. But it happens. Your sports nature kind of just takes over. Like, well, just looks like they're done. But they really just, the fans are just embracing this. I think what's also making that possible is, I think Patty Gasso, I think she also is living in the moment right now with this team. Yeah. She has big goals, and she has lofty aspirations and expectations for this team. At the same time, she's enjoying the ride. She is, being appreciative of what's happening day to day, with the team. And not just in a good way, but in some of the ways that they have to work. And I think that's what makes them so good, is the ability to stay in the moment, not get too far ahead of themselves, not get over their skis, so to speak, and embrace the good, embrace the bad, things like that, where they find ways to rebound. They're never out of it. And it's that kind of living in the moment attitude, where it doesn't matter what's happened in the previous six innings. We just need this one inning, and we know we can erupt for however many runs that we need in this one inning to come back and win this game. And that's what they did. And they showed it kind of all weekend. I loved Jordy Ball's performance on Friday night. That was absolutely spectacular. Yeah, you give up the three-run home run in the first inning, but that was it. You gave up very little else the rest of the way to go and get the complete game. I mean, it could have been one of those games where just she didn't have it that game. And, you had to go to Nicole May, or you had to go to Alex Tarocco early on. And that would have really thrown off what Patty Gasso and, Jennifer Rocha wanted to do over the weekend with their pitching staff. But no, she just locked in, knuckled down, and went the distance and put on a spectacular performance. And also, the bats came to life really early and responded quickly, but man, she just locked in. And I was just so impressed with just the fortitude of the moment where she can, you know, give up that 3-run homer and then just recover. Like, it's done. Wipe the slate clean. Or as my dad says in golf, he walls it off. If he has like a double bogey or something like that on a hole, he just walls it off. He writes like, oh, that's done right there. We're moving on to the next hole, and that's gone. So I love that performance. It was absolutely, like, to me, it was one of her best. I know it statistically, it may not be her best, but just the way that she responded against a really good offense. Oklahoma State came into this thing the number 17 team in the nation in scoring, the number 18 in the nation in batting average. And I mean, the strike zone that they were working with on Friday night was absolutely silly at times on both sides of it. I mean, there were pitches that Kelly Maxwell was throwing that I'm like, what? That's not a strike. Like, that's a strike. I'm sorry, but that's a strike. And same thing for Jordy. Like, there were pitches where I'm like, you called that a ball? You called that? I mean, it was crazy. But I mean, just the way that she battled was absolutely incredible. And that's the overarching characteristic of this team, is they battle. They're good. They're better than everybody. But the reason that they're better than everybody is because they battle. They work. They fight. They have the mentality and the heart to overcome adverse situations.
So now, you said a little bit of a very brief reflection here. It's 41 wins in a row for Oklahoma. They've lost once this season. And I told you before the season, John, that I thought perfection was attainable for this group. And you know what? They've lost once, right? And it came very, very early. They've won 41 straight since. So, and they again were kind of in a couple of situations, as you alluded to, Friday and Saturday, where, you know, for a lot of teams, they might have lost those games, but Oklahoma didn't do that. So we enter the postseason. We turn the page now. Oklahoma's, as we thought going in, the clear national championship favorite. If they don't win it, I mean, right now it is, if we're doing, you know, FanDuel odds, and I don't think they're out there, but if you had them, Oklahoma's minus money and the field is plus money right now to win the national championship is where Oklahoma's at relative to the softball world. So, you know, we'll see what happens next. It's Big 12 championship time, and I would imagine Oklahoma's hungry to go win this thing, given that they lost the championship game to Oklahoma State last season. So if you missed what it looks like, Oklahoma will play the winner of Baylor, Iowa State. That'll be Friday for Oklahoma, either Baylor or Iowa State at 1:00. That is an ESPNU game. And the rest of the bracket, it's number 2, Texas, number 7, Texas Tech, number 3, Oklahoma State, number 6, Kansas. So that's what the bracket looks like. And, you know, 41 straight wins, John, now it's time to go into that. And they've been there, but now it's time to get into that championship mindset, and it's postseason mode.
There's a reason why they're the favorite. They're the number 1 team in earned run average. They're the number 1 team in offense, and they're the number 1 defensive team in the country. How are you going to beat them? And you're definitely not going to beat them twice. You know, the reason that any of these teams in the Big 12 tournament have hope is because it's a one game playoff. You know, there's not a series that they have to win in order to beat Oklahoma. Any team can get hot, beat a team on any given day. But when it comes to the postseason, you get in the regionals, super regionals, Women's College World Series, you're going to have a really, really tough time beating this team. And even this weekend, in Oklahoma City, you're going to have a really tough time because Oklahoma, they're going to have the opportunity to set their pitching up whatever way they want it. And however Friday goes and Saturday goes, it's going to be perfect for them because they've got 3 starters that they can rely on. And then Kirsten Deal, again, another really great performance from her in the Saturday win where she came in and pitched an inning, a third against Oklahoma State to help get the win. I think that showed you that you've got a fourth pitcher that you can throw out in a crunch time situation if you have to and feel really good and really confident in. So that's absolutely huge for this team as they head into the postseason to be able to have 3 starters that they can throw out against anybody and then a fourth, you know, pitcher that they can bring in relief situations and get quality, you know, quality innings from. So this week when they go to Oklahoma City on Friday, and again, they'll play the winner of the Baylor-Iowa State game. Don't sleep on Iowa State. They just took a series from Baylor just last weekend up in Ames. you know, Baylor coming off the sweep of Texas and Waco. So that's going to be a really intriguing, you know, opening round matchup. But, you know, I imagine it's going to be, you know, Texas and Oklahoma State in one semifinal, and then Oklahoma probably against Baylor. They're riding high coming off the sweep, but that could go either way. But we'll follow that as we go through Big 12 championships this weekend in Oklahoma City. Make sure you're tuned in. And then we're going to be here all postseason, all regional, super regionals, Women's College World Series for the NCAA tournament, tracking Oklahoma's progress as that goes along. But until next time, he's Josh Helmer. Follow him on Twitter at JoshOnRef. I'm John Williams. Follow me on Twitter at John9Williams. Follow the show on Twitter at LockedOnSooners. And make sure you're here Monday night, 9 p.m. Central Time for our weekly live show on YouTube. But you can also listen along on the podcast side as well. We look forward to seeing you then. Make sure you're part of the chat. Talk to you then. Boomer Sooner.